Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
It just took me a lot of time to really process things and process what was happening. Like, I don't think during that particular season, even though my body was so responding to the trauma I had been through, I still don't think that my mind was like, hey, we're a little depressed and anxious and we're like struggling really bad. Like, I think I was still a little bit probably in denial and still trying to be strong and like have it together. And so a lot of my struggle, again, is just like, I think my natural state is to keep it to myself.
Are you ready to talk to me? My name is Deborah Falada, and I'm a licensed professional counselor, national speaker, and author. Through my blog, books, and podcast, I have the privilege of helping millions of people get healthy mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and relationally. The purpose of this podcast is to have on-air, authentic, counseling-style sessions where we talk about how people are really doing and give my guests and callers an opportunity to talk to me as a licensed professional counselor. Each of these episodes is meant to show you that we are all on the journey of healing, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and relationally, together. None of us are immune to the challenges and struggles of life, but we don't have to walk this path alone. I'm so proud and honored to be having these conversations with men and women who are courageously paving the way for open and honest conversations about their personal journey of healing. So if you're ready, let's talk. Today, I'm excited to have Maddie Pruitt-Trout talking to me on the podcast. I am excited to introduce you to her, and I'm excited for you all to get to know her and her heart and to have an opportunity to dig into her story a little bit. So, Maddie, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so looking forward to this conversation.
Good for you, because it takes a lot of courage to just kind of be real in today's world. And I think the idea of having an on-air counseling session can be really intimidating to some people, but I love that you're just like, let's do this.
No, for sure. I'm like, let's go there. Let's talk about it, because I mean, and I've grown into that for a long time. I was really scared to embrace feelings and emotions and talk about hard things. And so through a lot of trial and error, I have learned just the power of being honest and sharing your story and how it may connect and help other people and also help heal your heart. So I am very, very excited.
Well, it's so good to have you. So first of all, I want to start by telling people a little bit about you. For people who are listening that don't have a context for who you are, tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah. So I grew up in a small town in Alabama, raised in a Christian home, really grew up, love for Jesus, love for church, and love for sports was like my mantra. That was everything that I did. If I wasn't at the church leading dramas or doing sign language or singing in the choir, I was at the basketball court just playing basketball for my dad. My dad was a basketball coach, and so spent a lot of time playing basketball. My dad ended up becoming my basketball coach and played for him all throughout high school. Again, basketball is such a big part of my, you know, establishing myself and who I am and figuring out, you know, that I'm a competitor and that I like to win. and then faith, obviously such a big part of my life. Had a relationship with the Lord from a young age. And that carried into high school. But I would say high school was kind of the time in my life where I began to search for my identity and seek it out in other things outside of my relationship with God. God. And I tried to find that in, you know, approval and acceptance with guys. Relationships were definitely a big struggle for me. I really wanted to get that attention. I wanted to be liked. I wanted to be wanted. And then, you know, I would say another thing was just like, I wanted to have a good reputation. I wanted to make my parents proud. I wanted to set a good example for my sisters. And so religion became a lot more about the approval of people and reputation than really a relationship with Jesus for me throughout high school. And then going into college was kind of a breakthrough moment for me. I ended up getting dropped by a lot of sororities, which was really hard and painful and really hit hard with the sting of rejection. But it forced me to hit my knees and really ask myself where I was placing my value and security. And so that drove me to really getting plugged into my church and going all in with my faith. And so I started getting plugged into the church and joined a small group, found good godly community. And then through that, ended up joining my church's Bible college. And so in 2018, I graduated Auburn University with a degree in communications as well as Bible college. And throughout my time in college, I actually dated a guy for 4 years. And so we dated all throughout college and then after graduation. And then I felt like the Lord asked me to lay that relationship down. And that was one of the hardest decisions I had made at that point in my life as a 22-year-old, and all my friends were getting married. And I had been dating this guy for 4 years and thought he was the one, but just lacked peace and felt led by the Lord to lay it down. And so laid that relationship down. And for the next year, I mean, truly was going through a pretty intense heartbreak and really asking myself the same questions, you know, who am I? What am I called to do? And really struggling with even thoughts like, is there something wrong with me? You know, why didn't this relationship work out? And so really wrestling with a lot of those thoughts. And in the midst of that, I had some friends who applied me to go on The Bachelor. And that was not in the cards. That was not, you know, in the forefront of my mind at all. I'd never watched the show before. They called me to go on the show. And I remember when they called, I totally thought it was a prank call. I didn't even take it seriously, to be honest. I laughed and played it off, called my mom laughing, and just was like, I would never go on that show. And she just really like checked me very softly and was like, hey, the first thing that we do is we pray. Like, let's pray first and just see what the Lord has. Like, maybe this is some crazy weird opportunity that you say no, or maybe this is some crazy weird opportunity that God leads you to say yes, but let's just pray about it. And so we spent months praying as a family. I fasted, I prayed, and felt led to go on the show. And I had no idea what God had in store or what was going to happen. And it was a really crazy, wild experience that God used in a really big way, bigger than I could have ever imagined. And came off the show, went all the way to the end, but came off the show and really was now dealing with my whole life being so different. I went from a small town girl living in Alabama with, like, you know, 5 or 6,000 followers to now having almost 2 million followers and, you know, a platform and people having a ton of opinions about my life, good and bad, yeah. A lot of praise and a lot of criticism, which then just led to, you know, trauma. I mean, I really was like, went through a lot of trauma in the recording of the show, with just a lot of things within that context. And then just the trauma of like a lot of people having opinions about my life and dissecting my every move and thing that I put out. And so, for about 6 to 8 months, just really struggled, lost like 20 pounds, really struggled with even like leaving my house and, you know, just having really depressive feelings and thoughts, and just being super anxious. Skin started breaking out like crazy, had a hard time eating and sleeping. And so that was a really tough time in my life, but I knew that God had called me to go on the show, and I knew that he was using it for a reason, not only to strengthen my faith, but to reach other people. And by the grace of God, continued healing. The Lord gave me opportunities with different publishers and agencies, and was able to really just share my personal experience and testimony of, you know, being under pressure and being faced with some big decisions and how I was able to really like stay true to my faith and stand firm and did not always do it perfectly by any means, but just the lessons that I learned in between. And so I released my first book, Made for This Moment, in 2021. And later that year, I actually, after moving to Dallas and releasing my book, got set up on a blind date with my now husband. And we met just through some mutual friends. And I knew on my very first date that he was the man I was going to marry. And actually right before I met him, I had started writing my now new book, The Love Everybody Wants. And I started writing it single and then, got to write from a very authentic place, even through dating and engagement. And then after 2 or 3 months of being married, I finished the manuscript. And so, yeah, we've been married for almost a year. We live in Waco, Texas. We're now, a part of serving at our local church, Harris Creek, under Jonathan Pakluta. And learning and growing every day. So that's a little bit about me. And I speak, I write, and I do different social media collaborations.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That was quite a comprehensive and thorough timeline. Like, that really helps us get a snapshot of who you are and what you've been through. And I'm looking forward to taking some of that and digging a little deeper into some of those spaces. You talked a lot about the idea of feeling pressure. Right before we got on our call, you know, we were just kind of talking through, and pressure is the word that kind of kept coming up to the surface. And as I'm hearing you talk, it sounds like one of the most difficult seasons in your life was post The Bachelor, that season of, you know, being home and struggling. Let's dig into that a little bit. Tell us a little bit more about that time. When did it start to feel good? Was there a point where you were like, this feels great, this is fun, this is really neat? And then was there a point where things started to feel differently? And if so, like, talk me through what that felt like from the beginning of that journey to that point where you were kind of at your lowest.
Yeah. I think one of the most difficult parts that I found myself in was I felt this pressure from the world. And I also felt this pressure from the church. And I felt like I was kind of an outcast in both. I felt like I was getting stoned by the church and stoned by the world. And I was, you know, the girl who stood, you know, for faith and purity on a secular show. And so, you know, the church is like, why did you go on a crazy secular show? And then the world is like, why are you standing for purity and faith on a secular show? Yeah. And so I really felt kind of like in the middle, you know, and torn in between. Obviously, growing up in the church and, you know, graduating from Bible college and wanting to do ministry, you know, my heart was just to use my story to point other people to Jesus. And I think that in the midst of that, there were definitely moments where it was really hard for me by just the labels I was feeling, by just the judgment I was feeling, the pressures that I was feeling to conform to either or, you know, to just be, I think, a local church girl, which I kind of am right now. And then also to just like go all in with just Hollywood and everything that the world has to offer. And so I really constantly felt a pressure from both sides. And then I also even felt pressure from myself. I think I really, you know, beat myself up of just, you know, just like, I need to get it together. Like, I need to stop allowing these things to bother me and affect me. And even like saw, you know, close friends, I experienced church hurt in the midst of that and experienced even close friends, you know, kind of gossiping and having opinions and making judgments, just about my life. And just, yeah, I think there being so much outside pressure and so many opinions about me just really led me to even question, you know, okay, God, did I not hear you right? Was I not supposed to go on this show? You know, and even to like the darkest of thoughts of like, why am I here? Like, did you make a mistake, you know, with creating me? And so I think so many of those times, it really leads you to like get to like the root of why am I believing this lie? And, you know, why is this affecting me to the degree that it is? And so there were definitely times where I would get a lot of like really hateful comments, and it would just cause me to question, you know, my own faith and my own identity and my own purpose. And so, yeah, I would definitely say there's been a common theme of pressure throughout my life, even after graduating and all my friends being married and me being like, I need to find my person. I need to get married because there's this timeline and there's this, you know, people are looking at me and I need to have it more together than this. So I would say that's definitely been a common theme.
Up until that point, after the show, when you're feeling like torn between these two worlds and people are being loud and opinionated, would you say that it sounds like that's the time you felt the most pressure in those moments? But backing up, tell me, were there other times in your life where you started feeling that pressure in smaller ways? And if so, you mentioned when your friends were getting married. What about even before that?
Do you have a hard time keeping New Year's resolutions? If that's you, let me give you some advice. Don't make any, because behavior modification based purely on willpower will fail you 90% of the time. Instead of a New Year's resolution, learn why you keep failing and how to do it differently by transforming from the inside out. Starting January 1st, join me and thousands of others on a 31-day reset journey where you'll learn how change actually happens psychologically from the inside out with small, sustainable mind shifts and strategies that will have a huge impact on your life. This free journey with me will give you exclusive access to daily content, video teachings, as well as a private Zoom event with me where we'll process what you're learning face to face. So grab a copy of Reset anywhere books are sold and then sign up for this free journey at truelovedates.com/reset series, R-E-S-E-T-S-E-R-I-E-S, truelovedates.com/reset series, and get ready for a reset.
I'm sure that there were a lot of, you know, moments that like I wasn't even aware of that they were, you know, creating pressure, you know, with my dad being my basketball coach and just wanting to like do good for him and wanting to be a winner and wanting to make him proud. I'm sure there were moments of that. I think also being the oldest of three girls and being the oldest sister, there were definitely moments of pressure within that context of just wanting to set a good example and wanting to be a good role model. And I think even a lie that I believed, that like pressure that I put on myself, was just that I couldn't let people see, like, to be a good leader, it meant that I had to be perfect. And it meant that I had to have, you know, these walls up and that I couldn't show weakness. I couldn't show like, you know, sin struggle. I couldn't show me being scared or whatever it may be. And so I think that that was something that I really had to fight most of my life and really didn't experience breakthrough in that area until college, when I really started joining, you know, community groups and confessing and having people pray over me. I think for a lot of my life, I definitely put a lot of pressure on myself to reach this standard. And I don't know what the standard was, maybe the world's version of, you know, relationships or the world's version of success or, you know, just making my parents proud.
Right. Well, I think that's the key, is that the pattern for you has been finding some sort of an external measuring stick, whether that's your dad and his opinion about you, whether it's winning and, you know, having a certain record, whether it's what your parents think of you because you're the older sister, what your sisters think of you, what people at church think of you. So it happened pretty quickly that you had this measuring stick that was external to you, right? Some sort of measuring stick. And not that any of those are bad measuring sticks. They're just measuring sticks that fluctuate, right?
Yeah.
Because your dad could have a bad day. You could have a bad day. Your your sisters could have a bad day. And so this external measuring stick is kind of like following you around. And all of a sudden, now it's what people think, and, you know, social media and people's opinions of you. Is it safe to say that you didn't really have negative opinions about you until that season?
Yeah, I would say for the most part. Of course, there's like, you know, in high school, you got your random, like, you know, group of girls that are just I mean, I had someone in high school that was like a bully, like, to be honest, and would start rumors and would say really hateful and spiteful things to me. But I think outside of that, in that high school kind of department for probably like 4 or 5, 6 years, that was something that wasn't really like a part of my life throughout college and post-college until I went on the show. And then you're just opening yourself obviously up to a world where people just have access to speak their minds and their opinions about you on, you know, different platforms where they can just gossip and talk and spill tea. And then also just on your own personal page and things like that. And so I would say, weirdly for me, the praise was just as harmful as the criticism. And so I had to, it took obviously me not doing it the best or not doing it well to then me realizing how much it was affecting me to really just put up massive boundaries around social media because of even the praise and the criticism and just the way that it, like you said, it was just, I was constantly living with this external like measuring stick and letting other people determine my worth, value, and purpose.
And it feels easy to do. It's so much more comfortable to do that when the measuring stick is praise. But if we're going to make much of praise, we also have to make much of criticism.
Absolutely.
And so I see the first half of your life as this season of making much of praise, but it feels great because people are happy with you and great job, Maddie. You're such a good big sister. You're so good at basketball. You're, you know, all of these things that you're doing really good at, your grades, your behavior. And then all of a sudden, you have to make much of criticism. I can imagine that was a really hard season.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just so easy for it to get to your head, the good and the bad. You know, you're walking around either with your head puffed up or you're walking around like feeling like you're, you know, the scum of the earth. And so that was something I realized, this is no way to live. Like, I can't continue in this way if I want to, one, be, you know, like purposeful in what I feel like God's put me on this earth to do, but two, just to have a healthy mental state and emotional state. Relational state. And
how,
I think,
how long did that season, that really hard, you mentioned like that pressure, the mental pressure starting to also then affect your, to manifest in physical ways, on your skin and your sleep and your eating. So all, like you said, symptoms of clinical depression. So how long would you say that season lasted for you?
I would say like my healing and experiences with trauma in that season really manifested differently at different times. So like the filming of the show, I felt like I was in such, you know, like the fight or flight, I felt like I was in such fight mode. So like, I was just in such like, I didn't have a choice to like break down into like my body was just like fighting and surviving. And then I feel like when I came out of that, then it was like my body realized like what it had just been through. And it's also dealing with like all of these outside of opinions and things.
What was so hard about the filming part? Okay. I don't know anything about The Bachelor. I have literally never watched an episode in my life, but I know that the general concept, ironically, is kind of a measuring stick. And there's all of these people trying to measure up against others and see who ends up being the one that matches with The Bachelor, right?
Yeah.
So even that in and of itself, like even just the concept of the show is triggering, because here you are like already struggling with this internal value, this external measuring stick, and then you're essentially thrust into this show that's all about a measuring stick, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's all about being picked and chosen. And I think for me, I didn't even realize that it had affected me until after. Like, I think when I was there, I was in, again, such just like fight mode. And so I was even like encouraging, you know, the other girls there. I was reminding myself of truth, and it didn't feel as much of a struggle in the filming process until the very end. Because I'm trying to think about what all I'm allowed to say, but you know, with as much as I can say, you are removed fully from everything that has made you you and everything that you have been dependent upon pretty much your entire life. So I don't have my family and my friends and contact with them and a support system. I'm really put in this very foreign, you know, world and concept in a very like competition. Right. Again, it's like put your best foot forward and see if you get picked and chosen. And so it is a very like, of course, not a ton of people can necessarily relate in that way. But I think we do often as just people like find ourselves in those environments. Like I know even before the show, you know, there were moments and times of my life where I was put in environments where I so badly wanted to be picked and chosen, you know? And so I don't even think I realized at that time, like going through it, what all it was doing to my mind and how it was affecting my body. And I think it was after the filming, when I came off the show, it probably took anywhere from 6 months to a year to really fully start healing from those things, like physically, because it really manifested for me after filming physically. And so, like I said, it was just loss of sleep, loss of appetite, really anxious, constantly like even nervous to like get into big rooms of people. And because I experienced church hurt, it was even triggering for me to like go to like a new church. And you
know, because you probably felt like eyes were on you everywhere you went. Like you're in this fishbowl of pressure. Everything you're doing, somebody has an opinion about. Do you think part of the reason you didn't feel that part of it was because during filming, it's not out yet to the world? It's like, when you record something, it hasn't been released. And then all of a sudden when it's released, it's out there for everybody. And then all of a sudden the opinions are released. Like you open the floodgates and now everybody's watching and everybody's offering feedback, but now you're home, you're done recording, you're home. And you have to process all of these comments and feedback and DMs and all this stuff that's now coming in like an avalanche.
Yeah.
It doesn't even happen in the small, like it's not like a trickle. It's literally one day nobody knows anything. The next day, the floodgates open.
Yeah. I mean, I remember like there being like, it was just like, it was like magazines and podcasts. Like it was this, you know, entertainment industry world while also being like, you know, just people who watch the show world, you know, of like commenting on things. So there were like from, you know, big media perspectives to also like individual perspectives and them all speaking into, you know, your looks, your personality, your family, your values, and like people saying some really horrible things.
What were some of the hardest things that you remember on both sides, like from the Christian side, but and then from the entertainment side?
Yeah, I would say from the like entertainment side, I can't really remember specifics as far as like, you know, magazines and podcasts. I definitely know there were definitely some out there that were not probably the kindest. I honestly tried not to look at them and read them. But I would say, you know, some of the messages, I mean, there were like really hurtful DMs of like talking about me, talking about my family, people even saying like, you know, you're a stupid virgin and I'm going to, you know, come to your house. I'm going to rape you and your whole family. I mean, just, you know, really crazy, hateful, hurtful things. And people that would even come after my family and attack my family, attack their looks, attack, you know, their character, attack their parenting, you know, all kinds of different things. And it's just, it's a really crazy world we live in. You just can't, it's like, I would have never imagined that. So I think it was a lot to stomach and deal with, like you said, because it was so overnight, it was just a lot to deal with at once. And because my life beforehand was just so like not that, and it was very hidden, and I was working in foster care and adoption, you know, living in a small town in Alabama, that was just like obviously such a massive change and transition that now my life is this, you know, in this spotlight where millions of people are, you know, talking about it and having opinions about it. So that was very hard.
You know, it's interesting when you said that the media was easier to block out than the private messages. And I think there's a lot to that, because oftentimes the personal hurts so much more than the public.
Absolutely.
And I don't think people realize, especially people on social media who just message these influencers and the people that they look up to, these pastors and leaders. I even get all kinds of comments. I don't think people realize how that feels personal. It's like you're coming into my mailbox, my inbox, and you're leaving me a direct message to me saying something hurtful. That can be so much more painful than public opinion, like just a newspaper article or a negative review or whatever else. And that's a lot. So you're feeling that from the one side, but then the church, who's supposed to be where you belong, you don't necessarily feel like they're embracing you either.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was just a lot of like, you know, history with the church that I was at for, you know, 10, 15 years and had been serving with and serving at, and just a lot within that of, you know, people who had even been on previous Bachelor, you know, episodes had also gone to that church. And so I think their defense mechanism was to not, you know, partner with me or be a safe place for me or welcome me because of what they had experienced in the past. So I think they were also reacting out of like protecting themselves and putting walls up, which I, in a way, totally understood. It just was really hurtful. And, you know, people that I was really close with, that I'd been close with for years, that I had, you know, lived with and watched after their kids and, you know, been super involved with their family life, you know, that really like turned their back on me and really just, you know, said that they wouldn't be able to be in relationship with me or be, you know, in contact with me. And so that was really, really challenging. Since then I've had like, you know, healing conversations and we've been able to move forward. But at the time that was really hard. And it was hard for me to feel like I could trust a church after I had given, you know, 10, 15 years of my life and poured so much into it, to just feel like overnight, you know, there's just the severed ties and just the, you know, no more relationship. So that was really, really challenging for me. Yeah. And it took probably a year and a half, I would say, before I felt like I could really get involved with a church again. And the ironic thing is when I met my husband, he did not want to be in ministry. And when he told me like right before we got engaged that he felt like God was calling him to be in local ministry and be a pastor, I literally started bawling crying. I was like, no, but it's cool that the Lord's like totally redeemed it now. And we're now a part of a church, and that's, I've been able to heal in those areas, but for a while it was really tough.
Yeah. I think that is the hardest part. People are always asking me, where do I find a good counselor? At the Deborah Falada Counselors Network, we want to help you navigate through any difficult season you might be facing. We want to help you find relief from the pain and stress of the present and healing from the wounds of the past in order to find freedom, joy, and peace in the life you're living today. Our team of trained, licensed professional counselors will walk by your side and give you the tools you need to face any personal or relational issue you might be up against today. With an integrative approach, we'll guide you with truths from God's Word paired with the best of modern counseling and psychology to help you get unstuck and live freely. There's no better time for healing than today. Book a session with one of our counselors at deborahfalada.com/counseling and get started on your journey of healing from the inside out. You know, sometimes people who struggle to live in the gray, the hard conversations, let's talk through this, it's so much easier to live in a black and white way. Like, we're either going to accept you or we're going to reject you, because it's just so much easier. It's like less things to navigate, less conversations to have, less red tape to have to explain. So it's like a yes or a no. But in that can be so much pain and so much hurt and so many unanswered questions. And I'm so grateful to know that that didn't totally turn you off to the body of Christ, you know, when you've been hurt so much by the body and not haven't always felt like you fit in. But it's amazing how God can redeem that. So how long was it until you decided, okay, I have been depressed about this for too long, and now I can't live like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, for a long time, when I started feeling those depressive feelings and, you know, all the anxiety, I just wanted to isolate. Like, I just wanted to stay at home. I wanted to be like, I had my family, I was living at home, but outside of my family, like, I just didn't really want to invite anybody else in because I was afraid of being rejected or hurt or judged. And so, that probably went on, for almost a year after I came off of the show. And
ironically, the isolation adds to the depression.
Absolutely.
But it feels safer. Like, your body is convinced that this is the way to avoid conflict, but really you're also avoiding intimacy.
Yeah, absolutely. I've 100% learned that, like, putting up walls doesn't just keep out all the bad. It also keeps out all the good. And I was, you know, in, you know, hopes of protecting myself, really only hurting myself by, you know, staying to myself and staying isolated, because shame spreads in, like, secrecy and isolation. And so as I was, you know, in my house and not leaving my house, it was like that shame only continued to grow, and that those lies only continued to grow. And
was your family worried about you at this point in your life? Like, what was their reaction to all this?
Yeah, I think, like I said, I've always been a really strong person. And so, you know, it's been really like, I've worked through a lot of this, but, like, I did not know how to fully let people see, like, the most broken parts of me. And only felt like I, you know, had to be on. Of course, like, my family has always been my safest place. And so, you know, if any struggle, they always saw it. So I would say they definitely, I think with, like, the weight loss, like, that was what, you know, was just, like, a little alarming of, like, okay, you've got to make sure you're eating, you've got to make sure you're sleeping, you know? I think, again, it just took me a lot of time to really process things and process what was happening. Like, I don't think during that particular season, even though my body was so responding to the trauma I had been through, I still don't think that my mind was like, hey, we're a little depressed and anxious and we're, like, struggling really bad. Like, I think I was still a little bit probably in denial and still trying to be strong and, like, have it together. And so a lot of my struggle, again, is just, like, I think my natural state is to keep it to myself. And of course, my family saw, you know, some of that, but I think that it still took my mind a while to, like, fully process. And then just through time and honestly, like, counseling and just godly community, like, having friends to just confess to and pray over me, I think is what really started that healing journey. And then, like you said, having, you know, confronting and having those hard conversations, like, for me, going back to where the lie began, like, going back to where the shame started and addressing those things, you know, and having conversations with the very people that, you know, really hurt me, and just saying, hey, I forgive you. Like, I forgive you. And also, I'm asking for forgiveness if there's anything that I did, you know, on my end. Because I think I can often just play victim and not realize that, like, sometimes I have, you know, something to own too. But I think realizing the power of, like, forgiveness and confession has been so healing for me and my, you know, road to just breaking free and living in fullness and freedom and the peace that God has for me.
Yeah. You know, I always tell people that trauma is a little delayed, in the sense that, like, when a soldier goes off to war, they're not usually processing the trauma of what's happening in the moment. Like you said, when you were filming, you're in fight or flight mode. You know, you're not even processing how much this is affecting the measuring stick, the identity, the value that you hold. And then oftentimes when a soldier comes home from the battlefield, it's later on, a year later, sometimes too, when life becomes a little bit more safe and secure and familiar, that all of that trauma starts to surface. And it's like, it's time to deal with me now. And mm-hmm. And for you, it manifested not just in your mind, because you're trying to repress it, like, no, I'm fine, let's just hold it together. So then it has nowhere else to go but your body.
Absolutely.
So it starts to come through in your skin and your sleep and your appetite and all of those things. And honestly, looking back, someone in that stage would probably really benefit from some sort of medication to get their body back to baseline. But also, like you said, like the work of counseling and really starting to unpack, where did these lies begin? Where did these beliefs begin? Because thoughts lead to feelings, which then lead to our behaviors. So if you're isolating, what's the feeling? The feeling is shame, right? Fear. Well, what's the thought that comes before that? And that's where the work of counseling for you meant going back and getting to the roots of where did some of these lies begin? And they probably began long before The Bachelor, but they were exacerbated in the pressure cooker of The Bachelor.
Yeah.
So looking back, you know, can you pinpoint maybe one or two places where that lie of what you have to be, who you have to be, where your value comes from might have began?
Yeah, I would say probably one of the biggest pivotal moments was being 16 years old and getting cheated on, my first relationship. And I found out in a very public, like my whole entire lunch table. And in high school, this is like, you know, huge deal. And so, you know, someone came up to my lunch table and told me that my boyfriend that I'd been dating for 8 months, you know, cheated on me. And I think, again, that's where my protection mode went in and I had to act like I was fine. And so I played it off, but then I ran to the bathroom by myself and I just cried for hours. And in those moments, just questioning everything about myself, you know, questioning my value, why he didn't choose me, why he chose someone else. Those were the thoughts and the feelings that I was having. And then I think from there, what actually happened, because I think you can kind of have two responses from that place. And what happened for me was I really hardened my heart. And I was like, I refuse to let anyone ever hurt it again. Mm. And so I really began to try and get into, for the next couple of years in high school, into relationships just to like break up and like in the relationship to make that person feel what I once felt. And just to prove that I was worthy of being picked by somebody. And so that continued. And then I would say college, again, that was really when I went all in with my faith again. And so a lot of that changed. There's definitely been, I mean, still like moments where I have to, you know, remind myself I'm already picked, I'm already chosen, I already belong. And I think for me, it took years to realize like that person's inability to see my worth and value should not make me question my worth and value. Because in the moment, I didn't see that, you know, I just saw myself as being rejected and not chosen. And I think that started a very hardened heart. It started this striving and this proving and, you know, proving that I was worthy of being picked, proving that I was the best in all aspects, you know, from schoolwork to friendships to romantic relationships, it filtered into everything. And so I have like a whole chapter actually in my book called Pick Me. And it's really based off of this like trend called the Pick Me Girl, because that was like a big part of my story for a long time. And I would have never admitted that because, you know, I wanted to be the girl who like didn't care what anybody thought and, you know, was perfect. But that was definitely a struggle for a long time. And I think it definitely started in the bathroom stall as a 16-year-old girl crying because she just got cheated on. Mm.
It is amazing how when we go through such pain, we want to numb it. You know, it's like sometimes the pain hurts so much that it's easier just to say, you know what, I'm not going to feel this anymore ever again. I'm just going to shut off this part of my life. I'm just going to numb it. And like we talked about earlier, when you numb the depths of despair, you're also numbing your ability to feel the depths of joy, the depths of acceptance and belonging and hope, because you can't turn down the volume without turning down the entire volume, right? Not just the bad. If all of the emotions are in the volume control, turning it down takes away a lot of the joy as well. And you know, I meet people who I call toxic optimists, because they just want to look at the bright side. Well, that wasn't too painful. Yeah, this whole day got destroyed, but here's all the amazing things that came out of it. And there's nothing wrong with being optimistic people. It's just when our optimism is being used to deny reality.
Absolutely.
Like, this is what's actually happening, and this is what it feels like, and this is how hard it is. Because if we're not broken, then we don't really need a healer, you know? And yeah. and it's interesting because I think a lot of people can relate to that, of just numbing the pain. Like you talked about becoming hardened, having a hard heart, and probably nobody could sense that from the outside looking in. I mean, you seem like the sweetest thing on earth. I'm sure nobody could just sense the numbing, the hardening of your heart, but really it was for your own safety. Like, I'm not going to let people get close because they just can't be trusted.
Yeah.
So what has been the process for you of starting to trust again?
Yeah. I think it took me going back to like looking in the eyes of my 16-year-old self and just starting to like speak truth to her heart again. And, you know, reminder of who she is. It took me going back to where those lies began. It took me, you know, getting really uncomfortable and like confessing those things to friends and mentors, and joining, you know, small groups with my church and doing life in community. And it just, yeah, it took me doing what was really hard, which was being vulnerable for me. Yeah. That was super, super hard for me. Again, it just another opportunity for someone to judge or reject or, you know, hurt me in a bigger way down the road. And
you're not immune to it. It's like, totally. Just because it happened in a severe way and you're trying to do it right and trying to choose healthy people and trying to be vulnerable in the right places does not guarantee that you won't be hurt again.
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing is, you know, I began this healing journey in college and grew so much in my faith and, you know, really became really strong and confident in my identity in Christ. But then, you know, that got hit again when I went on The Bachelor and, you know, experienced church hurt and experienced all of these opinions. And then it forced me again to just really, you know, look to God and look inward of like, where are you placing your worth and value, and ask myself the hard questions, and continue to speak truth to myself, and then choosing it every day. Like, since then, like, I think it really is a day-to-day decision for me of like, okay, I know my downfalls, I know my triggers, I know, you know, the things that would cause me to maybe go into isolation, or that would cause me to go into overperformance mode, or that would cause me to try and take control of everything. And, you know, and I've seen the unhealthy patterns, I think, throughout my life. And so now I feel like with the help of the Holy Spirit and just community, I've been able to really pinpoint those things, which I'm super grateful for and not always perfect at. And I think also that's one of the beauties of marriage, is like my husband now sees things up close and personal, and he's like, that's not healthy. Let's talk about that. You know, that's not a good habit. That's not a good pattern. And so really, really grateful for that. And I think, again, it's just a day-to-day choice and just doing life in community and being aware and being prayerful, meditating on truth and speaking truth over yourself, I think has been transformative for me.
You know, it's interesting because it's each and every day waking up and asking ourselves, what is my measuring stick today? Who is my measuring stick today?
Yeah.
And you know, I think most of us who are Christians and committed to Jesus can say, well, of course, we don't want to measure ourselves up by the measuring stick of the world, you know, but the measuring stick of the church is not any healthier. And I think so many of us measure ourselves by that measuring stick. How's my ministry? What do people think of me? Am I going to church every week? What would my pastor say? What does it look like from the outside looking in that I'm doing for God? And without realizing it, it seems like the holier measuring stick, but it's still just as evil and wrong and unhealthy, because our measuring stick can't come from anything or anybody other than Christ. It's not our spouse, not our children, not our church, not our ministries. And I think you don't realize how much stock you're putting into that until it crashes and burns.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was the biggest revelation for me, is like, Maddie, your true worth and value comes not from yourself or even from someone else, but from a God who loves you relentlessly and pursued you to the cross and beyond. And every day, you know, wants you to understand and grasp how wide and long and deep and vast his love is for you. And that has been truly the only thing that's like, I go through something, you know, like The Bachelor, and I'm like, that's what's kept me. That's what helped me cope and heal. And, you know, of course, there were so many practical things that I did as well that were super helpful. But truly, at the end of the day, it's just reminding me where my true worth and value comes from.
Yeah. And that is a process of replacing our trauma with God's truth. And it's a process that we have to do on a daily basis, because there's always going to be something that's an appealing measuring stick, right? In every turn of life, whether it's how we parent, whether it's our marriage, whether it's our ministry, and so important for us to assess that pressure on a regular basis. Thank you so much, Maddie, for sharing your story and your journey of hardships and healings and just dealing with that pressure that you still have to deal with. I'm sure today you're going to look at your DMs and there's that pressure that you have to deal with and figure out how to navigate and how you're going to process it and what you're going to do with it. So thank you for being vulnerable and sharing with us. For those who would love to connect with you and learn more about you and your ministry and the books that you've written, tell us a little bit more about that and where people can connect with you.
Yeah. So you can literally find me on pretty much all social media platforms, just Maddie Prew, M-A-D-I-P-R-E-W. That's my Instagram, TikTok, Twitter. So yeah, I really enjoy posting, you know, about the words God gives me and also the failures and lessons I've learned along the way, especially in my writing. That's where I've found just the ability to be so vulnerable. And honestly, what's been therapeutic and healing to me is like writing things down, not only in a journaling kind of way, but even in a written form that I pray and hope helps other people too. So my latest book is called The Love Everybody Wants. What You're Looking For Is Already Yours. It came out in September and it's pretty much found anywhere books are sold. You can go in person and get it. You can check it out on Amazon or my website, theloveeverybodywants.com. But yeah, that's kind of, you know, my latest project is my book and my Bible study.
That's exciting. Maddie, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for talking to me. And thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast and giving me your time today. If you're enjoying what we're doing here, leave us a 5-star rating and review and help us get the podcast out to others. If you want to go deeper with getting healthy and making healthy relationships, go check out some of my books, True Love Dates, Choosing Marriage, Love in Every Season, Are You Really Okay, Married Sex, or my newest book, Reset. You can find more information about all of those, as well as hundreds of articles and courses, as well as the Debra Falada Counselors Network, over at my blog, truelovedates.com, or my website, debrafalada.com. I love connecting with you online. So find me on Facebook or Instagram at Debra Falada. Send me a DM and tell me your story. If you have a question on your mind or a guest suggestion, reach out to me at truelovedates.com/talktome and let me know what's on your mind. I'm Debra Falada, and it was so great being with you today. I can't wait to talk with you again next week. I'll see you then.